Our sermon today comes from the experiences of a life well lived. That being said, it's a little out there, requires a bit of an open mind, but I'm sure you'll all enjoy it. So, the Bible is a timeless classic, having been printed, copied, changed, and rearranged countless times since its inception. But the biggest question modern religion faces with the Bible is, how can we make such a timeless classic relevant to today's masses, who are so reliant on the forward march of time and so dependent on the ebb and flow of social definition? Sure, in more liberal faiths like Presbyterianism, it is accepted that the Bible should be read and proclaimed in ways that entail degrees of contextual sensitivities. That meaning, what is relevant to you and your life, you take these readings. But beyond that, some other faiths do not have such luxuries. Unfortunately, they are bound to an entirely literal reading of the good book. But from our objective studies of the Bible, we have learned much and made much relevant to us in our ways. Regardless, as human civilization evolves, so too will the Word of God in the way it is delivered, but in a way that will surprise you. The future of faith is quite strange, but that doesn't make it any less wonderful. Now, if anyone here has studied our social evolution through the science of sociology, you may be familiar with another old but good book, or rather research paper, written in the late 1800s by a sociologist by the name of Max Weber. His findings, titled The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism, at the time sought to explain an odd but seemingly plausible link between the Protestant Reformation in Europe and the commercial revolutions happening all over the known world at the time. While the correlation may not be immediately noticeable, the reasonings Weber provides, mainly advances made with the printing press and other communication technologies, start to make sense when compared to more recent developments. Brace yourselves. We are about to go beyond the scope of your typical sermon to the frontier of civilization, a place called the Internet. Considering that it's nearly 40 years old at the time of this writing, the Internet is nothing new as a technology. But as a social medium, it's starting to become the focal point of human interaction. We do business online, we chat through instant messages, buy things, and at this point I can name at least 3 or 4 friends who are in successful relationships first kindled on the web, and many more unsuccessful ones, come to think of it. Anyway, since it's an extension of humanity as a whole, the internet is full of both the best and the worst humans have to offer. More recently than not, we hear about the horrible things that happen on the internet, where hackers freely steal personal information to sell on the black market or scatter amongst devious masses, and where people go to solicit the most illicit things under the guise of anonymity. Anonymity is both the gift and the curse of the internet, since as an ad hoc experience, most content that found there can't be linked immediately to a face here in real life. To maintain order, most websites enforce some kind of authentication to ensure its users are both identifiable and accountable for their actions. But there is one place on the internet most notable for lacking such things, a place commonly referred to as being godless and pure evil, a place that currently has more active users than even Facebook and extends so quickly that the average thread there barely lasts more than a couple of hours before it's usurped by another. I'm talking about a place called 4chan, an image board where hackers go to dump the private passwords and files from thousands of innocent victims, home to nameless demons who congregate to bash on people and prey on their defining flaws, weaknesses, in an attempt to destroy them for who they are. It is on the strange thing about this is the staunch definition I provide here is completely defiant of the site and its actual purpose. Considering 4chan was started and is maintained solely for something we call the lulz, or laugh out loud, for humor, laughter more often than not at others' expenses. Absolute schadenfreude. The jokes made there, referred to as memes, are as definitive of our whole society as they are of the site. Anyone seen a t-shirt recently with a cat consisting partially of a rainbow and a Pop-Tart running across the night sky? Does that sound familiar? It's iconography. Well, it's actually a byproduct of both 4chan and YouTube. And now it's considered part of pop culture. You see it everywhere you go. You see it on buses, things like that, the annoying orange. So many things come from this dastardly place. because it's an open forum for information. But either way, most of 4chan's denizens are believed to be average people who go there to satisfy morbid curiosities, free of fear from negative repercussions. Perhaps this explains why racism, sexism, homo, and xenophobia are so popular there. Now, I've heard stories of religious crusades by churches against the evils of 4chan. Not surprisingly, they were all complete failures. How can we bring God into such a godless place? Surely it must be impossible. And sure enough, it was. But remember, God works in mysterious ways. The guise of God is not always a gift, for many times in these days, it has been mixed with fallacy. One doesn't have to look far to see the same kinds of hatred you could find on a 4chan thread brewing in places that call themselves houses of the Lord. But I digress from naming names and institutions to call attention to where it is truly needed, to our local community as a whole. The best example I can offer comes from the time Pastor Tom paid a visit to my high school in what must have been either late 2008 or early 2009. As a student director of activities, I had brought it upon myself to do something a little bit more thought-provoking than my colleagues had done. Having been involved with the school's largest extracurricular group, the LIGAL Alliance, Legal Alliance, Long Island Gay and Lesbian Alliance, for various reasons, I had decided to invite Pastor Tom to attend one of their weekly meetings, citing his laurels of activism in the LGBT community. Honestly, it did not appear to me as something that could be as potentially profound and shocking to the group as it was. Yet sure enough, a good portion of the people there were quite surprised to see a clergyman enter the room. Reactions were mixed until the silence was broken, and a message of outstanding peace proclaimed. Immediately following came countless testimonies from the young men and women present, most of them describing a fear or hatred of religion, based deeply in either personal rejection or empathy for stories heard on the news. All of a sudden, it was clear. This is why 4chan is such a godless place. True, one could say God is unwelcome there, but only as we know him. God can be seen there if we open our minds. Last year proved to be the defining moment for the internet, or a defining moment for the internet, amidst one of its worst crises. Does anyone remember hearing stories about something called Lulzsec on the news? They were a group that committed the largest data theft in history, stealing and publishing close to 2 million private passwords linked to credit cards and other personal information. This leaked dirt showed up on 4chan, as well as several other places, where it, of course, was abused and, abused is to be expected. It was around that same time, when the internet seemed to hit an all-time low in terms of morality, that something rather unexpected happened. Now, bear with me. As a place used most often to discuss TV shows and movies, no one was particularly surprised to find an outstandingly negative review of a thread covering the reboot of Hasbro's My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic television series. It was entirely unexpected and even anticipated. It was entirely expected and even anticipated by most users. What was unexpected, however, was the number of users that watched the review and found it to be too uncool and heavy, even for 4chan. It was at this point some anonymous person decided that they had just about enough of this. Be it for the sake of irony or possibly sincerity, that person decided to post an image macro, which is essentially a caption screenshot from the show, in defense of it. It was really the first time anyone had stood up for anything on 4chan, and it was followed by hundreds of other posts containing similar image macros. The users who posted ponies seemed to identify with virtues as seen on the show, virtues that don't fall far from the New Testament teachings we read earlier today in Hebrews. United behind the made-up phrase "love and tolerate," they eventually grew so numerous that they expanded beyond the CO and B threads from which they came. Within a month, no thread on 4chan was safe from ponies. Bigoted hate threads ceased when clogged with image macros of Pinkie Pie, and for every spiteful retaliation, there was no shortage of bright, colorful rebuttals. For a period of about 2 months, 4chan was flooded with ponies. It was only a matter of time before the moderators banned them. But still, the phenomena continues, and as the New Age axiom goes, mods are asleep. Post ponies. Having grown beyond B and beyond 4chan, ponies embodied a spirit of activism that was previously impossible to find on the internet. By giving a pastel-colored face to previously nameless, faceless users, an identity was forged that continues to grow this day. An identity that stands for something not too far from the message and virtues of Christ. Now, in my recent expansions and explorations, I personally have delved into the pony community, not just because it aligns with my faith, but because of another personal experience I had in dealing with my autism. Some of you might know I have a form of high-functioning autism known as Asperger's syndrome, and it deals and afflicts with the way I socialize and the way I speak. Now, this is not uncommon amongst many other individuals, particularly on the internet, where socialization occurs in such fearless ways. But I decided to get involved after having taken a course at Stony Brook University in socialization in my late high school years. I was taught many different things, how to look a person in the eye when you speak to them, how to treat others with respect, how to wait until others finish sentences, and how to expand onto topics less parochial than your own to learn about things in this world instead of just, you know, invoking your own thought process, which is very hard for someone with high-functioning autism to do. I was one of the few in that class that actually paid attention, tried hard, studied, and many of my colleagues, I remember talking to them, asking them why they were failing, and they were saying, "Why would I ever want to talk to another person? I'm perfectly fine here in my own mind, doing my research, doing my work, thinking, cogitating, whatever." All those messages were simply disregarded by them. But later on in life, starting my second year of college, when this whole phenomena began, I had received a call from an old friend of mine through the group. His name was Alex, and I remember him being one of the more socially awkward individuals there. It was very hard to get a word out of him edgewise, and here I was, very surprised to see him calling me. Now, what could it have possibly been about, I wondered. Him being more than the average 4chaner, his involvement not even suspecting. I answered the call and listened to him say something along the lines of, what is it? So what is this friendship stuff I've been hearing so much about? Because he'd learned, apparently, from the show and from the community online that friendship is something to be sought after. I'm not sure exactly why he didn't get that in the first place, but still, the uprising of thought that this has brought amongst this community is what's most amazing. And so I actively participate in a group called Bronies NYC. We have derived the term bronies from the thread that originally came from B, combined with ponies, bronies, to create a safe haven for many in New York City. We have active monthly meetups and close to 500 members at this point. And I've taken the virtues I've learned here at Old South Haven Presbyterian Church, those of community, those of tolerance and love, that defies all, this being a more light church, the most inviting. I've brought those things to the meetup group, which I now run and operate with five of my friends. And in this open universe, this community, there's been a flourish of great artwork and music inspired by this kind of culture. But in the end, all I see when I look upon these people that may have openly rejected God because of the churches rejecting them for their sexuality, because they may have been excommunicated, who knows what, but this is still an open door for them to pursue some form of faith and some form of activism. It might not be linear, but as long as they're doing things that are similar to the works of God, I honestly think we have no right to complain. Going further, it all stems back to the Protestant Reformation and Max Weber's works and writings, and that this is more or less the Ponycent Reformation, as I call it. It's an expansion of art and culture that's all inspired by one thing, but so ambiguously linked that you can't seem to prove it. Well, later on in history, Protestantism was directly linked to advances made in technology and advances made in labor and commercialism. Around the late 1800s to the 1890s, the rise of the populist platform proved this, that when employers started treating their workers with more respect and dignity, as had been taught and nailed to the wall in those 95 theses. Only then did they start to see increased production, increased understanding. And beyond that point, so basically Martin Luther nailing the 95 theses to the door is a lot like that one 4chan post that started it all, but in many ways they are abstract. Either which way, if you can see the work of God when you look around you and take it in any form that it comes, you will be ready. So even though from a literal standpoint, if any of you were to go and watch Friendship is Magic, you would notice that, yes, they are polytheistic, and a few things don't exactly line up. But if you look at it for what it's worth, in the same way that you look at the Bible and read it and make it relevant to your own life, the lessons taught in each episode start to add up and make sense, especially for someone with high-functioning autism who has not been properly socialized, who hasn't learned these lessons of their own because they've been sheltered, because they've been cut off from society, because they've rejected it openly. Here is a medium for them to learn, and although it is a very odd one, I accept it and continue to work towards building an ever-present and ever-growing community. And so I look to take what I've learned in the Brony community back here to Old South Haven Church. As a deacon, I've learned much when it comes to community outreach and activism. I have participated in several Brony charities in the past, and Brony events and organizing these events. And I'd like to take some of my organization skills that I've learned and put them to use here, perhaps putting together a concert, anything I can do to enrich the local community as the months go on. But yes, to conclude, well, let's see. To conclude, basically, I want to say that although this seems so odd and so far-fetched and so out there, in reality, it isn't. And it just points light on what I love so much about this church and what I love so much about my religion, is that a lot of people in churches these days are trying to make these messages relevant to kids. They're trying to change the and adapt the Word of God. But in all honesty, I think the Word of God in the church should stay exactly as it has been, and the flame rekindled by good people such as yourselves. Because here, where it is static like the Rock of Ages, where we can constantly come back and refer to it as the written word, this is where people will come back to years from now when the Brony community has been exhausted, you know, when things have changed, when even if it is just a passing phase, people will come back to the church because of the virtues we have here, because of what we stand for as a community. And to that, to answer that, well, let's see. A show of hands. How many of you were hippies in the 60s? All right, let's go a little further back. How many of you were beatniks in the 40s and 30s? Anyone? And I suppose there's no one left over from the Odd Fellows Society of the late 1890s. But either which way, those were all movements that seemed to defy the social wavelength at the time, that just cast it into the wind. But they each had their own values that they stood for, and those values outshone the actual the name of the movement. And eventually, as many hippies are here, have become one with the Word of God in a way. So, in conclusion, I'd just like to say, take everything for what it's worth. And as far as the church goes, as far as those people I know who've been excommunicated for their sexuality, who've been cast aside for mental illness, I just want to say that for the church in general, you have to love limitlessly if you expect limitless love.